Thank you for tuning into today's Baseball America podcast. Our podcast is sponsored by S. Preston Designs. S. Preston is world famous for his minimalist design of baseball mascots, college, and major league stadiums. S. Preston's designs have been featured at the Hall of Fame and at ballparks around the country. This week, we're giving away an S. Preston's Design MLB Stadium poster. To enter to win, all you have to do is head over to baseballamerica.com/stadium contest, select your favorite stadium design, and submit. It's that easy. Again, to enter to win at baseballamerica.com/stadium contest.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast here from our beautiful studios here in Durham, North Carolina. I'm Kyle Glazer alongside JJ Cooper. We're here to talk about the Braves system. And JJ, when you released the Braves top 10, it was pre-punishment. Kevin Maiton was still in the system, ranked number 9. We are now post-punishment. Wanted to just get your general sense of thought on just how much of a talent drain was it the Braves lost, and how much does it affect, you know, the top 30 and their organizational talent ranking and just the big picture of where they stand in the baseball prospect power ranking, if you will?
Well, it hurts. I mean, there's no doubt that this punishment is painful if you are the Braves. I mean, there's a variety of reasons it's painful. You lose Kevin Maiton. You lose probably, when it's all said and done, I think I've had 5 of the prospects. They lost 12 prospects, had a 13th prospect, the contract voided before it ever became official. So 5 of those would have probably cracked the top 30, or 4, maybe a 5th. I mean, right around that range. And then, so obviously that's significant depth. Then you talk about the international penalties that they're facing, and the reality is that
that will affect them down the road. There's no question.
You have that. And then you have they're going to lose a 3rd-round draft pick. You have that. But the reality of it is they lose a top 10 prospect. Kevin Maiton was 9th on the list. And to be completely honest, that was 9th. There's a little bit of inertia involved in that. Like, if you just based it off the reports that you had for 2017, he would not have ranked 9th. But at the same time, he was considered absolutely positively one of the top international prospects to come out, not just in the 2016 class, but to have come out in years. And you don't throw that away. And so you put that all together, and Maiton is definitely a loss. But they also lost Soto. They lost Del Rosario. We could keep going. They lost a number of really high-ceiling, lower-level prospects who are still years away, but who would have easily fit into a top 30. And you put all that together. Now, I do feel like that a lot of the effects of this are going to be more long-term than immediate, because you still put them as an elite farm system, because the top of this list is still led by a guy who has a case to be the number one prospect in baseball.
Right, right. And that's where I think it's interesting. Just the reaction for a lot of Braves fans seemed to be, oh my God, the sky is falling. In reality, this is a loaded system. All these guys were guys who were 5 years away, 6 years away, in some cases 7 years away. While obviously it always hurts to lose talent, by no means does this somehow drop the Braves, you know, multiple spots down the rankings. This is still a team. You look at the top 8 prospects, and as you said, you know, Maiton, if it was just on the reports, would not from this year would not have been top 10.
He was probably not going to be a top 100 guy. I'll put it that way.
So it's one of those things where yes, it hurts. I think we'll see the effects of it more in the future. But in terms of right now, considering what the Braves have built, this is still an elite system.
And one that the reality of it is you got not, it's not just Acuna, it's Luis Gohara, who is the hardest throwing lefty starter in baseball, period.
It's Max Fried back from the dead.
Right, it's Max Fried who, back from the dead, part version 3.0 at this point. You know, you have, it's Kyle Wright, who's one of the best, you know, had a decent, a very solid case
Anderson,
to be
all these guys.
The number one, yeah, you know, prospect in the draft. I mean, he was in that consideration, so you're talking about him. And then you go beyond the top 10. Now, one moves in here. And I'm not even sure, like, I'm finishing up the 30. Right now, it's probably, it's Joey Wentz, or it's Bryce Wilson, or it's Alex Jackson, or it's Tucker Davidson.
So I was going to put you on the spot. You know, Pache becomes 9. Who is number 10? If you have to decide right this minute.
Probably Alex Jackson.
Okay. Speaking of prospects,
back from the dead.
Yeah.
The thing that the Braves did right there is, it's funny, the weaknesses of Alex Jackson are the same weaknesses he had when he was a Mariner. The strengths of Alex Jackson are the same, but the very, very, very big difference is You take the same guy. You take a guy who's, if you think it's going to be, I think it's going to be a below average hit tool with above average plus power. You take that guy and you say he's a below average defensive right fielder, he's probably not a regular big leaguer. That's just simple reality of it. Doesn't run all that well. It's not great defensively. Just not all that interesting. You take that same guy, you put him behind the plate where his strength is actually more important than his range.
He's always had the arm. He was considered one of the best arms in the Mariners system.
The arm has never been a problem. You can find scouts who say, yeah, he's probably a 35-40 right now defensively, but I think he can get to a 45 or 50. And they say, if he's a 50 defensively, he's going to play as a regular in the big leagues for a long time because a 235, 240 hitting catcher with 15 to 20 homers, who's average defensively a strong arm, that guy plays for years. And that's just the difference between the two positions. With the Mariners, he was a right fielder. With the Braves, he's a catcher. As a catcher, now he still has a ways to go defensively, but as a catcher, all of a sudden that makes him back into a potential regular.
Yeah, the profile matters. I want to work back up the list a little bit. I think we've spoken enough about Ronald Acuna. We know how good he is.
He's really good.
You know, I kind of wanted to move into that tier of pitching prospects. We talked a little bit about Luis Gohara, why he's number two. Take me through the Kyle Wright versus Ian Anderson. You know, once you start getting into that glut of right-handers who are in the low minors but have some promise, what was sort of the thought process there?
Okay, so we start with, we got Gohara's the top pitching prospect, and that's because, I mean, the body's not good. The body's bad. The body's bad. There's just no other way to say it. But you are talking about premium stuff. He's got a fastball-slider combination that could be exceptional. Mike Soroka's three, and Soroka is the antithesis to me in some ways of Gohara. The body's good. He dominated AA as a 19-year-old. He's got exceptional feel to pitch. He's got all those attributes, and then good stuff, very good stuff. It's not average stuff. It's above average. It's not that blow you away stuff. But what he has is he's the floor guy. It's really hard to envision a scenario where Mike Soroka, barring injury, which is true of every pitcher, but barring injury, it's hard to envision him not having big league success as a starting pitcher because of the attributes he has shown. And again, age is not as important for pitchers as it is for hitters, but 19-year-olds who could do what he did in AA, he may be a four. But he could be a very solid number four starter for a long time. And then you say, like you said, you get past that. And then you get to the, hey, you want some risk? But it's really good risk, which is Kyle Wright was, when you were talking about who's the best pitching prospect in the college pitching prospect in the 2017 draft class, you could very well, when the season started, you could say, I'm saying Kyle Wright, and you had a pretty good case to make. When it was all said and done, you could say, I say Kyle Wright, and you could be right again. I mean, again, he did not separate himself.
Right, it wasn't slam dunk, no one else is in the conversation.
It wasn't like you're saying Brendan McKay is clearly worse than him.
But there was an argument start to finish.
You know, Fado at the start of the year, I know he went later in the round, but Fado was in that consideration. There was a number of guys in that consideration. But you are talking about plus stuff. And you're talking about a guy who could move very quickly. He could be, the thing that's fascinating with this is, and again, we have an entirely new front office who has to acclimate themselves to these guys, because we're talking about Alex Anthopoulos and Andrew Tinnish and guys who have zero background with these guys.
It's a
whole reevaluation process. But you are talking about you could see in 2018, it is not inconceivable, Luis Gohara in the rotation. He finished it last year. Lucas Sims is in that discussion, who's a top, who just graduated.
Sean Newcomb
should be in that rotation. And then you say, okay, Mike Soroka and Colby Allard both had a full year in AA. I don't think they're going to be there on day one.
But come up to Gwinnett, and if they do what they should do, if injuries strike, there's absolutely a scenario, no question.
And then you also have to figure out the Mike Fulton A-witches, and all that.
Oh, by the way, Julio Teheran's still
there.
I mean, I think it would take injuries for it to happen.
And Max Fried finished the year in the rotation as well. So They have a ton of guys to sort through. But if you say, why is it Soroka, Wright, Anderson, somewhat that is like, okay.
The 19-year-old who dominated in double A.
The 19-year-old who's done it in double
heavy.
A.
That's heavy. That's
the next is the first-round pick who's done it up to high A, briefly, but done it high A and has SEC background. And the next guy is the guy who did it in low A, but did it understandably on a shorter amount of innings because Ian Anderson's coming out of a cold weather state. They put the brakes on. But when you saw Ian Anderson at his best, you saw a guy who's, I mean, Ian Anderson's stuff at his best is pure stuff is better than Mike Soroka's. But Mike Soroka has done it in double A at basically almost the same age as Ian Anderson.
So it's going to be really interesting to see because all the old adages about, you know, you need 10 to get two to the big leagues. The odds are, as good as all these guys are, not every single one of them is going to be big league rotation members. They've got 10. It's going to be interesting to see who are the two or three that emerge because there will be injuries. Someone's development will go sideways.
The funny thing is they do say that adage, and I will say, and this is not saying they're going to do this in any way, but if you go back to the Braves, the glory days of Braves because you have that late 80s pitching staff, and that late 80s pitching staff, you had, again, this is my youth, so I was reading Baseball America at the time. But you had Kent Merker, Pete Smith, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, Derek Lilliquist. Those were the guys. Now, you could work in another. I can find you a Tommy Green or someone. But, okay, I would say on that you could argue they had like 7 or 8, and they produced 3 or 4. And if that's the, you know, that's the thing is it depends on, that's the adage. But really what, and that's where I am fascinated that they hired Alex Anthopoulos. Because on one hand, you could say for Anthopoulos, now again, we're talking about drafting, but I can't think of a team that did a better job of drafting high school pitchers than or pitchers.
Aaron Sanchez and Noah Syndergaard, anybody?
You know, supplemental first round picks. You know, they took Marcus Stroman. Again, you say a college guy. They took Marcus Stroman, and that was not a slam dunk by any stretch of the imagination because 5'9", you know, first-round college right-handers, you know, that's a pretty small subset of guys. But Stroman has, you know, lived up to it. Now, you could also say they traded some of these guys away, and they didn't. But my point being,
Joe Musgrove was a draft.
Joe Musgrove, supplemental first-round pick again.
And Asher Wojciechowski, they're able to move from trades.
I mean, they had a number. There's a story up at baseballamerica.com. We talked about this. But the thing about it is so the biggest thing that the Braves have to do, the new Braves regime, has to do over the next year to me, is they have to figure out which of these are our starters, which of these are relievers, and which of these are the guys that we're going to use in trade. And because they don't
make the proper identifications. And that's one thing for me I think sometimes gets lost. A lot of times new organizations or new regimes come in, and the first thing they do is they examine everything that's in-house under them. Mm-hmm. And I've seen just over the course of this, there's a lot of times there's a misidentification there just because you don't have the background on these guys. It's a quick hit look a lot of times where you have an old scouting report. And that's where I think sometimes these new regimes can either set themselves back from day one by misidentifying who's the guy we can afford to trade, who's the guy we need to make sure and hang on to. We've mentioned this is a really good track record, so you hope that they'll make the right calls.
You want to flip that. You can make the same argument. Like, we talk about Luis Gohara is number 2 on this list.
Right. And if they do it right, they can move their timetable up.
What I was going to say is Luis Gohara, you look at that trade in hindsight, and you're like, no, that there was a case where that was potentially a misidentification by the Mariners. We'll see long term. But
I don't know about hindsight, because at the moment that trade was made, I was like, what are they doing? Right. So I think there's a little bit.
But what I'm saying is you were talking about a relatively new regime who may have not had a full understanding.
He wasn't their guy they had signed. It had been,
Right. So, but I do think that what you are talking about is okay, the funny thing is for a team that is rebuilding, you look on the position player side and you kind of know what this team, now they got to clear some guys, but there are very few, your catcher, there for at least the short term, Alex Jackson could change this down the road. Cade Civic could be a backup. They got some other guys in lower levels. Castillo is very interesting long term. But you look at it and say, their catchers, they brought back basically Flowers and Suzuki. First base is Freddie Freeman. Second base is Ozzie Albies.
Up the middle there.
Shortstop, Dansby Swanson.
Center field
is Ender Inciarte. Right field is Ronald Acuna's as soon as they can figure out some way to just make the opening. But he's better. He is absolutely right now, at this moment, if you put Ronald Acuna out there on opening day, he is better than Matt Kemp. He's better than Nick Markakis. Better. Better defensively. And you like, I'm not, over the course of the season, I'm not saying, some of those guys, Markakis' April, I think, was pretty brutal last year, too. But the course of the season, I feel very comfortable you are going to get more from Ronald Acuna in 2018 than you will from either of those guys. Do you disagree?
To a point, Matt Kemp can still bring the thump, not over the course of a full season, but we'll see. I mean,
He's
such a defensive liability. There's no question. I think the total, if you were to separate it out, if you just told me, forget everything offensively, who will have the better year? I still think Matt Kemp will have a better year offensively than Ronald Acuna as rookie year. But if you take into account, I do think that. But you take into the account that
the total account that you're talking about,
the total everything,
a center fielder playing right field versus a DH playing left.
I mean, as much as I love Ronald Acuna, you know, could he in his rookie year, offense only, 276, 19 homers, 64 ribs in 115 games?
I think that's an upper level, but I think it's within his range. And the thing about it is that, again, Matt Kemp is a DH playing left field. The key part about this is I'm not talking about just purely offense.
Right, it's the defense. That's what I'm saying.
If you do that, for one thing, you got a young pitching staff. You put Inciarte in center, Acuna in right. All of a sudden, your pitching staff gets better. Right there.
Well, what I've said when we had this discussion during the player of the year is that the Braves are a better team with Ender Inciarte in center and Ronald Acuna in right than any other combination, whether you want to go Acuna in center and Kemp in right or Inciarte in right.
If you have those two guys, long term, now Christian Pache is a couple years away, but if Pache gets there and at that point you have Pache, Acuna, Inciarte. And let's let Inciarte have slowed down a little bit by then. He's the left fielder. Whew. That's as good a defensive outfield because Pache is better. You know, Pache has a chance to be the best of that group defensively, and that's hard to do.
You know, one thing you talk about kind of holes on the Braves side, we've talked a lot about, hey, they're good at first base. They're good at second and short. We'll see how Swanson bounces back year two. Third base is the spot on the infield you have question marks. Mm-hmm. Austin Riley did some really good things this year. And when we last spoke, it was after the season. He went to the Fall League, had a very good Fall League. And actually, just doing some final Fall League checkups, spoke to a scout today, as a matter of fact, and asked about Riley. And it was interesting. People have talked about, in the past, one of the knocks has been, I don't know about the bat speed. And at least what he showed in the Fall League, talking to a couple of evaluators, was, look, this is not a guy who's ever going to have crazy jaw-dropping bat speed. But his hands, his strength, his timing, his ability to get the bat to the ball. And I don't want to use the names the scout gave me because I don't want to out anybody. But he listed off a number of longtime successful big leaguers who you could say it was average bat speed, but you take into account strength, timing, ability to manipulate the barrel, know what the pitcher's trying to do with you. And some of the names he was dropping were multiple-time All-Stars, borderline Hall. I mean, it's something where I think, look, if you have crazy, gnarly bat speed, awesome. But average bat speed, major league average bat speed.
Crazy, gnarly bat speed by itself made Lasting's millage into a great player in Japan.
And that's exactly
what I'm saying. Like, recognition, all that goes in there, too.
And that's where, for me, I think with Austin Riley, the fact that he's shown all these things, this is a guy you can comfortably pencil in as your starting third baseman, you know, not next year, but long term.
And that's the interesting thing with that is that, do they go through next year with Johan Camargo and Rio Ruiz in a placeholder role, or do you say we're going to find somebody and eventually we may end up moving that person down the road, or we may work out a timeshare, whatever, as we break Riley in. But you're right. I mean, the only two positions, my point was I was making is long-term catcher, but they got a guy who could be that guy in 2019. Third base, but again, they have a guy who could be that guy in 2019. Maybe second half 2018. He did have a good bit of time in Double A. And then It's left field. That's it. That is, and I mean, that the thing that is fascinating about this is usually when you talk about a rebuilding team like this, there are a lot more decisions that have to be made. But this is a case where the decisions to be made are almost somewhat preordained for you in a lot of ways, unless you want to get really creative and say, we can do better at shortstop and we're going to trade Dansby Swanson, or we can do better at catcher, or we're going to do a package deal. And, you know, there are things they could do differently, but it wouldn't be shocking. I mean, this team, Alex Anthopoulos inherits a rebuilding team, but almost everything that they're doing, that their decisions to be made are to be made, are almost all on the pitching side.
And it's good pitching. That's not like, oh gosh, we have this guy who's a seventh starter and a sixth starter, and we have to find, and we don't have anything else, so they're going to have to pitch a full season for us.
The difference last year, they went out and they acquired R.A. Dickey, Jaime Garcia, and Bartolo Colon. And they went basically, that did not work out all that well. They got a little bit something back for Jaime Garcia. That was basically it. This year, you really look at it and say it's illogical. Unless they acquire a legit front of the rotation guy, it's illogical for them to go out and acquire a starting pitcher.
And that's where the time of development's key. Now Sean Newcomb's no longer a prospect who's waiting to break in. He's a big leaguer. We've seen, you know, Lucas Sims to a degree. Okay, we know he's
And I think Lucas Sims long-term ends up in the pen. But I think Mike Foltynewicz might end up in the pen. But
these guys are on the major league roster.
But you kind of start them out in the rotation, and then they get their last chance as starters. And if it doesn't work, mid-season when Mike Soroka's ready, you go, hey, Mike, we're going to have a bullpen now that's Foltynewicz, Sims, A.J. Minter. Those, you know, you could all of a sudden turn around and have – basically, the 100-mile group.
I think we'll see Gohar and Fried up before you see Gohar. I mean,
I see Gohar in the opening day rotation.
And then
Fried, both of those guys were in the end of the year rotation, right. So I expect. But my point is that if you're saying Tehran, Newcomb, who I think are both like locks.
And I would argue Foltynewicz is going to be in the starting rotation on opening day.
I do too, but I don't think I would not be as comfortable saying he's going to end the season rotation.
He had some big ups and downs last year, and that was I remember writing about the little bit three up, three down.
When he was with the Astros, like I remember when he was in the Midwest League, and you would talk to guys who were like, long term, I do think there's a pretty good chance he ends up in the pen. That's probably one of the reasons I say this. Been for a long time, there's been always that thought of he might be really good as a reliever, and I do think because again, Kyle Wright finished the year in High A. I expect he'll start this year in High A. But your SEC front of the rotation Friday starters are not guys who often need a long period of time in the minors. It would not shock me if Kyle Wright came out, made it to Double A. Now again, old regime, I would say that he'd start the year in Double A. Things change now, because they have a new leadership. But it wouldn't shock me to see him in Double A by May. And then let's be honest, if he's blowing away Double A, it wouldn't be shocked me to see him in August or September up in the big leagues, depending on where the team is. Because, again, you don't have to go far back, but you can look at a number of starters who come out of the SEC, come out of the ACC, and those guys can move fast because there is not going from Vandy to the big leagues is not as far of a jump as going from a high school to the big leagues, obviously.
Well, obviously. No, yeah. I think it's going to be interesting to see, again, I think it's important to note that not all of these guys are going to work out as everyone hopes. And we're talking about best case scenarios in a lot of ways. But the depth they've built at both the upper levels and lower levels, I think, puts them in excellent position to survive.
Well,
so whoever gets hurt, whoever's development goes sideways.
Absolutely. Because, again, when you go beyond the 10, then we're getting into Bryce Wilson, Tucker Davidson, Joey Wentz, who's now may move in.
Bryce Wilson.
Kyle Muller. Tuki Toussaint, Patrick Weigel, who'll be back in 19 after TJ. You've got all those guys. Now, what's going to happen? Absolutely. Someone, some two, some three of the guys that we just talked about, Luis Gohara, basically it doesn't work out for him because he gets too big or he has, durability issues or whatever. Or Kyle Wright moves a lot slower. Like he comes in his first full year and the adjustment to 5-day rotation is bigger for him than expected, and he's a little wild. Whatever. All these guys, there's always things that can be off-ramps. Mike Soroka's stuff is good. It's not great. Like, maybe it doesn't play as well as he goes up against big league hitters. Joey Wentz is a guy, you know, I mean, he is not on that crafty level, but he's not on the blow-you-away side either. Kyle Muller's fastball is even a little bit less than that. All these guys have ifs. But as much as one, two, three of those guys, the top 10, could slip, the other thing that could happen is Ricardo Sanchez next year goes from a guy who's...
Former Angels prospect.
Goes from a guy, I've written him up, feel like, forever. But Ricardo Sanchez could be a guy who goes from a very inconsistent, but 3+ pitches at his best, to a guy who does that more consistently.
Locks it in. Yeah.
You know, and or Touki Toussaint, next year is the year it all clicks, and all of a sudden the fastball and curveball play like you would expect them to play. And, you know, there's all these things that can happen. And again, that, you know, Freddie Tarnock, or, you know, they have so many guys that, again, it is the benefit of having numbers, is that they are going to have some attrition, absolutely, but they have the numbers to survive that attrition.
You know, one of the guys I want to talk about is mm-hmm. Tucker Davidson, because I feel like a lot of people get very, very excited over the rookie ball, the low A guy, and they rightfully so, with some draft pedigree of Joey Wentz and Bryce Wilson, but Davidson's a lefty in double A, and seems like...
He was A ball most of...
All right. Well, yeah, but he was a guy that seemed like, talking to various evaluators out there, I know we had a couple conversations where they liked him as much, if not more, than a lot of the other big names.
You can absolutely find guys who say, okay, Gohara's in a different group because he's a different, you know, Gohara Freed, and then next best, the lefties. I mean, you can absolutely.
Over even Colby Allard.
Yeah, you can definitely find that. Because, again, Colby Allard, again, if you like Colby Allard, you love his feel. You love kind of the ability to mix pitches, locate, command. But Colby Allard does not have the ability. It's a 2-2 pitch. I'm going to rear back. I'm going to throw a fastball down the middle and just blow him away. He can't do that. That's not him. He's going to stay on the edges. Hey, you know, there are guys who've done that to, you know, 300 wins or more. I mean, but he is a avoid the big part of the plate kind of guy. Davidson is a guy who can rear back if he gets behind in a count and say, I don't think you can hit this. And he can do that. Now, there are guys who think he's a reliever. The delivery is not as smooth. It's not as athletic as some of these other guys. But that is a very good pick. You know, Bryce Wilson, you could kind of say some of the same things for, you know, doing from, you know, right? But those are some very good picks of guys who, yeah, they don't have that first-round pedigree. But stuff-wise, they have... There's nothing that they need to complain about that they're trying to catch up.
So I think the main question that Braves fans are dying to know, in light of all the sanctions mm-hmm. is the wrong word, all the penalties.
Yeah, sanctions, penalties, lifetime bans.
Do you think this is still the number one system in baseball, or has the talent that was stripped out of it moved the White Sox above them?
Funny thing is I do think that you talk about the top tier. I don't see those two teams in a different strata. I think that they are probably the top two. And it really does depend on, you know, the Braves system is much deeper to me than the White Sox system. The guys who are 11 through 20 on the Braves system are significantly better to me than the guys still. Even after these they lose five guys from the top 30. The guys who are 21 to 30 in the Braves system, to me, are much better than the White Sox guys who are 21 to 30. That said, I would probably take the White Sox top 10 over the Braves top 10. And when you get to that, I mean, that gets tough. I don't want to give a full answer because we're going to do this, you know, but I would say I could see the case for the White Sox, but at the same time, you know, we've talked about this. I'm very high on this Padres system. I don't think that they're at that level yet. You know, because as much as I like Fernando Tatis Jr. and I do, you know, he's not Ronald Acuña. He's not Eloy Jimenez.
Correct.
But I also, the system that is in that discussion, because they can, I think they may have more pitching depth than the Braves, is the Yankees. Now, again, they've got the guy. They do have a guy at the top, Gleyber Torres. You can put Gleyber Torres in that Ronald Acuña, Eloy Jimenez discussion.
I personally don't, but I know there are people who do.
I, you know, you, Where would you have him when you say that? Like no, five,
to
six?
To me...
He's a top five, six prospect.
Yes, to me, like Acuna and Eloy, there is a clear differential between them and Glaber, but I do see Glaber... Right. He's not far... It's a three-spot difference, not a 10-spot
right.
difference.
You're talking about those... Well, really, my point is you're talking about three of the top seven, eight prospects in the game. And I would also have Eloy and Acuna above Glaber.
Like, Tatis is closer to Torres than he is... Acuna and Eloy at this point in time. Now, eventually that could change, but at this point in time.
But so, to me, like, Derek, okay, they're in that discussion, and then with the Yankees, really what it comes down to, I mean, Florial's a riskier prospect. He's further away, but he's very toolsy. He's where Acuna was in many ways last year, you know, but he could...
Different reasons, but I
guess... Yes,
I,
different
I,
reasons. In general, Acuna was, he had 40 games in low A. Florial had a better season. He strikes out a lot more. There's, you know, different risks and all there. But the thing that the Yankees have, and where I think they work into that discussion of top farm systems is that they're pitching the guys who are the 15th best prospect in that Yankees system. You could take them and say, I'm going to make an argument for them to be top 10 in another system, and you go, oh, yeah, easy. You know, that's the thing they have is like you go through and it's like, okay – okay, Alexa, give me all of the Yankees prospects who throw 100 miles an hour. Oh, wait,
well,
I have
me,
my
it's not
thing
even...
in Alexa actually is going to answer that. But
not even about throwing 100, but has some velocity, has life
has
on
a
their
second
pitches,
pitch.
Has a second pitch. I mean, it's more than just, oh, they throw 100 because you've got to be able to do all of it. And the Yankees
right,
have a really good group of guys.
But as I've always said, give me the guys who throw 100. You can have every guy who throws 90, and I'll win.
But I'll say, give me the guys who throw 94 with control and secondary, and I'll give you the guys with 100 and not the others, and I'll win.
Right, but yes, but what I'm saying is, given it all the same, I'm going to take the guys with velo over the guys who don't, because, again, this is a fun discussion for another day, but it is something on Twitter. I know people want, they desire that 88 with great command can really succeed.
See, maybe I think it's a little bit of a confirmation bias because I see the others. I see the number of people. Oh my gosh, he throws 100. It's like, well, yeah, but can you do anything else? So I see the other side of it, but again, might just be confirmation bias. Regardless, I think that'll wrap it up for our Braves talk.
Yeah.
This is a great system, regardless of, again, what is this? Do you like the pitchability or the velo? The Braves will give you both.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing is that they have a, when it comes to pitchers, do you need, you know, high octane with a second pitch? Okay, I give you Kyle Wright. I give you Luis Gohara. I give you Tuki Toussaint. You know, the guys like that. Do you prefer, like you're saying, do you want the guys who are 92 to 94 but can really locate? Mike Soroka, Joey Wentz, Colby Allard, those guys. Do you want guys who are projection and it's a little bit further away? Okay, Kyle Muller, guys like that. Whatever kind of pitcher, do you want hard-throwing relievers? A.J. Minter and Corbin Klaus and Phil Pfeiffer and, you know, Evan Phillips, whatever you need pitching-wise. If you're coming to shop for pitching and you need a trade, shop at the Bank of the Braves because they can give you whatever you need.
Absolutely. All right, well, I think that'll wrap it up here. For J.J. Cooper, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Till next time.
Don't forget your chance to win a stadium poster of your favorite team from S. Preston Designs. Again, enter to win at baseballamerica.com/stadium contest. Thank you to our followers for tuning in today.